Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 20th of December, and I'm recording at 9:45 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's just have a quick look at what's happened here reasonably in the short term, but also pretty much, we're not that far away from year end, so let's see some of the percentage gains that we actually have. Well, they are mighty impressive, needless to say. Now, I'll start with the USA, and the Dow up almost 24%, the S&P up 27.5%, the NASDAQ Composite Index is up 36%. In comparison, and this is all in U.S. dollars, okay? All in U.S. dollar terms, so that we see relative performances here. Canada, in comparison, how might that have done? Well, it's up only just over half of 1%. Mexico, down nearly 4.5%. Brazil, down 27.5%. Now let's move on to Europe, and here the news gets better. Given what people were saying about Europe, certainly at the beginning of the year, they will be mighty surprised by what we actually see here. The Euro Stoxx 50 index. That's up nearly 20% in U.S. dollar terms. The gains are substantial. Spanish IBEX up 23%. The Italian market, MIB, that's up 18.25 points. So's Amsterdam. Sweden up 17%. The wooden spoon in Europe actually is not one of these European markets that I can see on the main screen here, but it's actually the UK, which is up only 12.5%, and that's a reputable performance in its own right. Again, all in dollar terms. And the star performer in Europe, the German DAX index, up 28%. Now, we look at Japan's Nikkei in U.S. dollar terms. It is matching the S&P 500 index because it's up over 27.25%. Japan, for the record, in yen is up 52.67%. But I think it's the dollar figure that reflects more accurately what's actually happened there. Australia, well, a bit of a bummer by Australian standards, down 2.73% in U.S. dollars, but up 13.26% in Australian dollars. And Hong Kong, well, that's quoted in U.S. dollars, and it's just up a fraction, 0.63%, and that's been one of the stronger points for the China indices. I'll get on to them again in a minute, but Japan again. I mentioned that Nikkei 225 up 27.25%. The JASDAQ index in Japan is up 45.75% in U.S. dollars. So it's up nearly 75% in yen terms. Now China has been a serial underperformer here all year, as you know. And it's weakened quite sharply recently. So over this, it's had a bad month, and it's come right back down to test its November low, as I mentioned last night. I'll put this into perspective. The Shanghai Composite Index in U.S. dollar terms is down 5.71% on the year to date. In Chinese renminbi, though, it's down even more because the renminbi is a strong currency, and it's down 8.12%. The Shenzhen composite in China has done considerably better, and that's up 19.5% in U.S. dollar terms. So the banks are weighing down the Shanghai composite index. Now, the China Enterprise, Hang Seng China Enterprise, down just over 7% on the year. Moving on to Taiwan in U.S. dollars, modest gain, 6%. But then look at this. I mentioned Australia being down 2.76%. These smaller Asia Pacific markets. Well, let's take. I'll take them. The Jakarta index, that's the weakest. Indonesia, down 23% in U.S. dollar terms, and it's got a very soft currency because it's only down 2.81% in its own currency. Thailand, down 9.5% in U.S. dollar terms. Now, all these ASEAN indices now have soft currencies here, so they show lesser declines in their own currencies. Malaysia managed a 1.22% gain in U.S. dollars. It's up 8.83 in its own currency. India, the India Sensex index is down 4.17% in dollars. It's up 8.5% in Indian rupees. Have I missed anything here? Nope. I think that's covered the lot. So, interesting stuff. Now we get back to the U.S. Move here overall. And well, what's the big story? And obviously, it's been Ben Bernanke, and I think he, you know, deserves credit for having prevented a potential deflationary crisis, and I don't think we would have had a depression, but I think it would have been much tougher without Bernanke's program, as I've said before. But here's some news reported by the U.S. by the New York Times here from the U.S. Today, and that is that the third quarter U.S. GDP growth has been revised up to 4.1%. That's fairly impressive. So what do we have? We still have a very accommodative monetary policy, and they're only going to rein that in a little bit in January. So we're getting this late year-end run. And Owen, incidentally, has written a superb piece on this, which you will see in comment of the day. We have so you've got the U.S. economy is picking up. I think we can be reasonably confident that it's not going down the disinflationary deflationary path of Japan over the last many years, but the economy needs to be stronger, obviously, for the U.S. to, or for the Federal Reserve at any rate, to feel really comfortable about this recovery. But that takes time, as we know from Reinhard Rogoff and other historian economists who have pointed out that it takes minimum of, 5 to 7 years after a credit crisis recession. Well, we're only coming up to 5 years. We're not quite 5 years yet. a predictable performance, not a bad performance, but the big gain in here really is the stock market because of this phenomenally powerful monetary tailwind. And Japan has a phenomenally powerful monetary tailwind as well. So does Europe. They're not they're using different policies, but the European Central Bank is pumping in massive amounts of liquidity to the individual countries. So that tailwind is keeping these markets quite ebullient. But have a look. I'll post some charts, but you can find them yourselves. And incidentally, I'm getting to actually like the new chart library. It's been kind of a tough 3 weeks. Well, it was an impossible first week and a vexatious second week, and a workable third week. And we're just going to go on maintaining this momentum and improvement. We're not going to stop. We're doing this for you, our subscribers, and we're doing this for ourselves, in that we want to achieve a really good competitive service. We haven't had quite as much help from our former a firm that we were associated with, and that has caused a bit of havoc, not least in the favorites sector. But all these things can be overcome, and they are be, and they will be, and we will continue to go on improving all this. Okay, let me get back now to Wall Street. Some charts that I would suggest you have a look at. I would start with the NASDAQ 100, that's CCMP. Have a look at that on a weekly chart over 5 to 10 years, and look at them both. And as I say, on both a 5-year basis and also on a 10-year basis. And note that really going right back to December of last year, we have had this very orderly, consistent staircase step sequence. Staircase step sequence, a good descriptive term. You'll see exactly what I mean when you look at the chart. And you have a series of sideways trading ranges, steps, one above another. And the time frame during those sideways trading moves is becoming narrower. We had hit a new high in here today, and we'd been trading for 4 weeks here, and right at the end of the fourth week, hitting that new high here today. So if you look at it, it looks like a very steep staircase ascent. And as you know, this is a bull market now coming up 5 years here. And it's the 2013 performance is clearly an acceleration relative to what we had seen, the earlier recovery starting in the second quarter of 2009. Rivetingly consistent, so it's not over, and that's the important thing. And it still has that monetary tailwind, and that's very important. But ask yourself how sustainable that looks. And veteran subscribers, ask yourselves, you know, how many times have you seen something like this, and it's impressive and highly profitable. And I hope you're mostly long, and I certainly am. I've got a tiny S&P short position, which I need not have had, but I'm my, you know I'm my equity portfolio is fully long and riding this. Okay. So and you'll notice that NASDAQ, and that's the lead sector. So it is important to watch that. And you might also want to have a look at the there are plenty of autonomies, and not to mention the techie autonomies in that NASDAQ. You'll also want to watch the S&P. Plenty of autonomies in that as well. It's overextended. It's moved sideways enough in a ranging pattern to lower that overextension relative to the MA somewhat. But nevertheless, still overextended here. Then look at some of the shares. I mean, the Nasdaq. Well, first, just stay good. Taking the Nasdaq here for a minute. It's on 25 times earnings, and okay, those earnings have improved, but there are a lot of share buybacks that are taking place to boost those earnings. So it's not as if the revenue flowing into the company is producing all the earnings. Share buybacks are flattering them. But 25 times earnings. Now, that's not hysterical bubble territory, but it ain't cheap, I'll put it that way. And take a look also at the yield on that NASDAQ composite index, because that's about 1.25, so not much. Not much there overall. Now, is that sustainable? Well, yes, given the tailwind for a while longer, and again, there's no evidence that it's over, but and it's not going to be hard to see when this finally does eventually break, but I think most veteran subscribers will probably feel as I do that this is unlikely to persist in this manner beyond the short to not too lengthy medium term. So at some point here, I think during probably almost certainly during the first quarter of the year, we will get that 10% correction or more, which we haven't seen really for quite some time. That's when you get an index that's moved up 36% like the NASDAQ composite, 10% correction is not that big a deal, I appreciate. And I'm not looking for a bear market on these indices, but I do get concerned as we get more overbought here overall. Now, Japan, trading about half the book value of the USA. Very interesting. Certainly a lot of money, even bigger monetary tailwind here for Japan. And clearly an outstanding performance overall. Sorry, I'm just changing a screen here, and I can't talk and chew gum at the same time. But there I've got it now. What the Nikkei is hovering right up here at 15,870. Now that's just below the high that we saw back in May, and that's when we had that big key day reversal. So what the Nikkei needs to do, and it will do this, is to get a sustained break above 16,000. That may not occur this year. It could very easily if we see the yen continue to weaken, and it's at 104.10 against the US dollar here right now. But what I do notice is the TSE 2 index, that's Japan's second section, which is usually the leader. It is up near its highs, but it's lagging a little bit here right now. So if I saw a big upward dynamic next week on that or just after Christmas, then I'd say, okay, here it goes. Japan's completing this consolidation. So I don't know whether it takes Japan a week or two to complete this consolidation, or more likely, takes a few more weeks before it actually happens. But it's a very attractive market, in my opinion. And I think it's still all pretty well go in an uncertain world. It remains one of the best bets overall. And no doubt it will pull back when Wall Street gets that 10% correction. Okay, what about China? What's going on here with China? Well, it's hard to answer. Certainly, I think that a lot of it's in the politics and attempts to rein in, particularly financial firms and a number of businesses that in a number of the Chinese regions that were maybe a little bit out of control. So in terms of the global economy, you can't say that we're firing on all four cylinders. U.S. is clearly improving. Japan, that's the biggest turnaround improvement that we've actually seen. China really has yet to get going again, although some analysts are forecasting that growth will pick up during 2014. That wouldn't surprise me. That would make sense. I think China certainly has the potential to pick up its growth, but it hasn't happened yet. That's the main point. Germany, that fourth cylinder in here, certainly one of the best performances in the European Union, and its export companies are first class and doing exceptionally well. So we're not in all that bad shape here overall, and the central bankers keep reassuring us that monetary policy is going to remain very, very accommodative. Okay, what about these long-dated government bonds? Well, futures markets here are up today, so the prices are actually down. That'll bring back that USGG10YR. That's the one I keep talking about every day, and I just want to see where it closed. Gave up just about all of yesterday's gains, so it's quite interesting. The yield got quite close to. It must have gotten to about 2.9 here today, but it closed at 2.888, and so say gave up yesterday's gains. This is overall, we have the September high just over the 3% yield. We then dropped down to 2.47% in October, and it's been rallying back up ever since. I think it'll take it a few more weeks, possibly a few more months, to eventually break above this 3% level. My guess is that the Fed will try to hold that up here, and they may be able to do that for a while, but they certainly won't be able to do that beyond the intermediate term. And a little bit of a warning bell ringing when we see that yield break clear above that 3% level. And don't be surprised if it hovers around there for a while longer before it goes up very much. you know, when we start seeing this about up above 310, 320, I think certainly if stock markets are still overextended at that point, we will see some more nervousness here overall. Okay, now where are these markets actually going over the longer term? Well, I think that we'll get more choppy activity in certainly more choppy activity than we've seen in 2013 for Wall Street in 2014, just because this move is overextended to the upside. I'm not looking for a bear market on Wall Street, and I'll repeat that point that I certainly expect to see at least a 10% correction occurring, and it'll probably be more if it gets more overextended to the upside before that actually happens. I don't buy the argument that 20% is a well, it's technically people call that a bear market, but we get too many 20% setbacks within overall upward trends. But the key point I want to emphasize here is that I do not expect, and I have not expected, a big bear market. And I think the audios will point out, and veteran subscribers will remember, I've long said that that 2008-2009 low for the various stock markets, that that was not going to be challenged by the stronger markets, and I don't expect any big savage bear market where we're seeing this quantitative easing, and the quantitative easing is the obvious reason why it won't occur, and I don't feel that there's a fundamental case, even without the quantitative easing, as to why it should occur anytime soon. But I do expect a more choppy period for a few years, but then I think we are going to be well positioned for that secular bull market that I have talked about in all of these long-term audios. And how can that possibly occur? Well, I think that the factors are lining up very, very nicely. And the most important one is an accelerated rate of technological innovation. Yes, there is a social problem that goes with that because it keeps unemployment a bit higher. But the growth should be strong enough so that that's not a huge crisis. But smart machines are replacing people, and including smart people. Now, the other big driver here is lower energy costs in real, in other words, inflation adjusted terms. We don't have much of an inflation problem here right now. So lower energy costs, and the big factor, the biggest factor by far making that possible, is fracking. And then there's the expanding global economy, the rise of the middle classes, and the fact that most of these economies are run on a capitalist basis, which works better than anything else, full of flaws, but still works better than anything else, whether it's command capitalism, as you see in China and some other countries, or the democratic capitalism that we experience in the West. Okay, what about long-dated government bonds? Secular bear market, because the secular bull market ended, a bull market determined by falling yields, artificially kept down over the last few years by quantitative easing. I don't think they're going to move up in a hurry because I don't think global GDP growth will be strong enough to push them up that sharply, but I think they will be moving higher. In other words, having said that, I certainly expect to see that 10-year yield in the U.S. Move above the 3% high that we saw last September. Will we see it closer to 4% by the end of next year? That would be possible. I would see certainly something in the 350 above range is actually quite likely. So that's a dangerous area. And I'd stick to equities rather than those long-dated government bonds. And I don't like the bond funds. I think that's the least attractive way to pay it, play it. Elsewhere, what about these precious metals? Well, they're clinging by their fingernails here to the window ledge. And up a little bit in here today, but you know we had those big downward moves yesterday. So gold closed today at 1203. That's gold bullion, up 14.5 dollars. But it needs to get above the last rally high from that trading range. So for gold, that's got to be above 1270 at minimum. At minimum. And is that going to happen? Well, I don't know. I think it's all for the bulls to prove. I'll put it that way. Take the chart. The chart's in an overall downward trend. It's just broken down out of the last trading range. So there's nothing really bullish in there yet, except we're down by that June low, and we need to see some real strength, some upward dynamics here to reaffirm that June low. That's the minority possibility. There is a real chance that we get hit for another move to the downside. Industrial metals, I've been saying that I think they're in a base building phase here overall. It may be a lengthy base building phase, but don't be surprised if we get some catch-up moves by some of these lagging industrial metal mining shares, and also by these metal prices. But the certain ingredients that have to take place here. We need the producers to announce further production cutbacks. They're gradually moving in that direction, so we'll see more of that. And then the growth will need to pick up, and that's happening slowly. So don't expect big drama overnight, but those two factors will eventually combine. Currently they're combined in helping this support building base type 3. Looks like a type 3 churning time and size, although in bases you get less churning in the bases than you do in the type 3 tops as taught at the chart seminar. But that's what it looks like. Ranging base development activity, and I would feel we will most definitely see higher prices in a year's time for those industrial metals. And what about crude oil prices? Well, I think as more fracking comes on stream and we get more exports also continuing. Australia had an article on Australia producing its LNG gas. So this supply factor will, I think, prevent another spike upward. Something really appalling has to happen internationally, which I don't expect. It's not impossible, but I think it's very much against the odds, and therefore we should avoid, well, the chances, the long-term picture is that the chances of avoiding another big oil spike to the upside have been improving. And overall, I think as the fracking continues to be developed in the next few years around the globe, we will see less and less risk of higher crude prices, and it actually will have the lower oil prices in real terms that I've been talking about. In terms of other commodities, well, take the agricultural sector. I think, on the controversial subject of global warming, to the extent that we do see some global warming that actually probably grows more crops than it destroys. But how are the actual crop regions, the major crop regions? We ended 7 biblical years of bad climate problems, either too much wet or too little wet. But this year has been good for the crops overall, so those prices are much lower. That's good for the global economy. Keep your fingers crossed, but the chances are we'll get a little bit more good luck in terms of those agricultural commodities over the next year or so. And the process of producing these crops becomes increasingly more sophisticated, as you know. And some of them are just being grown in very large old warehouse buildings, not that far from their main urban markets. And we'll certainly see more of that over the next many years. Move on, as I don't want this to be too long, and I think it is already quite long. Move on to the currency markets. The hypothesis from us for the US dollar is that it is in a very lengthy base building, type 3 base building, ranging time and size pattern overall, and that the USA's advantages of very competitive energy prices and its big technological lead, which has been expanding relative to the competition, and that will underpin a firmer dollar overall. The Fed will be quite happy to keep the dollar soft for at least the medium term. I put it this way, until we have general overall confidence that the Fed has general overall confidence that the U.S. economy growth rate is sustainable. So that should emerge certainly in the next few years, and as it does, I think it will lead to a generally somewhat firmer U.S. dollar overall. In contrast, we'll have a weaker yen, and when Japan gets that target 10, you know, it's seeking 2% inflation. It's had so much disinflation, deflation. So they will continue to try to push the yen down. I'm sure Australians will try to keep their currency from moving up too much. I'm sure the European Central Bank will prevent the euro from rising too much in here. The softness of the yen means that a lot of those Asian economies, most of those Asian economies, will have soft currencies relative to the US dollar. And the exception so far here is China, and they're persisting with a firmer currency policy here for the time being. We've seen this in the past, and then they've suddenly changed policy really quite dramatically. Hopefully we don't get any dramatic changes in what they do with the renminbi. Okay, the Indian currency, very, very important. There it was too weak, but the new central banker appointed back in September has helped to knock that back, and he's trying to keep it in that 62 to 60 rupee range against the US dollar. And can he succeed with that? Well, I hope so, and I think there's a really good chance here overall. And remember, India will be a very, very interesting stock market if we get Mr. Modi, Narendra Modi, elected, let alone with a workable majority next year. So a lot to look forward to, a lot of interesting things to happen next year. And on that note, I'll draw this to a close and just wish you all of the very best, including a happy Christmas. And Good night. Good night to you all. Have a great weekend.